Anyway, we'll start at the top of Kufchet Amud Aleph. The Gemara is really continuing with the last story that we left off with, which was the case or the obligation of any individual who lives or has a forest property along the banks of a river that he has to leave a, I guess there's an easement, a public easement on any property adjacent to the river that they have to leave basically a sidewalk type of space so that the people who pull the boats upriver have that space. The last case we saw was a case where they approached Rabbi Barav Huna to cut his forest down, and he refused to do it because he said that first get the people upriver and downriver to do that, and then I'll comply. So the Gemara said that that's very difficult. I mean, aside from the logical argument, which is difficult, but from a Musari standpoint, that you would ask others to do it before he did it. So Gemara answered in the end that the owners upriver and downriver were actually Persian government officials who would not comply with the need to move their property back from the river. And since they would not comply, they wouldn't. He said, it's not worth it for me to cut mine down if they're not going to comply anyway. So he rejected cutting it down. So based on that story, now the Gemara on the top of Kufchet Amud Aleph starts. The Rabbi Rav Nachman Hava Ka'azil Ba'arbo, he was going on a boat down the river. Chazahau Abo, the Kaya Guda Denaro. He saw this forest that was adjacent to the river, I mean all the way up to the river. Amalhu Daman, who does that belong to? Amrulei, the Rabbi Rav Huna. Belongs to Rabbi Rav Huna. Amar, Biyada Sarim, Vasganim, Aitaba Malaze Rishona. I mean that the bad or the evil is coming from the top. I mean, here is Rabbi Rav Huna, and he's not complying with the halacha that one must. There's a public easement on the property next to the river. Amalu kotsu kotsu, cut cut. He sends off the mishartim to go and cut down the forest of Rabbi Rav Huna. Ata Rabbi Rav Huna ashkechei the kaitz. He comes out and he finds all these guys chopping his forest down. Amar man katsiye tikotz anfei. Whoever's cutting down my forest, his offspring or his descendants should be cut off. Amrei, kulhei shanei de Rabbi Barav Huna, all the years of Rabbi Barav Huna, lo yikem leizara de Rabbi Barav Nachman. Rabbi Barav Nachman did not have any children. And again, the justification, Rabbi Barav Huna felt justified and was justified in not cutting his down because Rabbi Barav Nachman was not aware of the problem of the Persian government officials upriver and downriver, which basically made it the moot point where the Rabbi Barav Huna should have cut down. Has a similar ring to the story of Rav and Shmuel, right? Rav and Shmuel, where Shmuel, Rav got upset at Shmuel, and then Shmuel, he was a doctor trying to help him out, and then Rav, in the end, curses him, so he's not able to have children, all at the same time of Rav. So a similar type of story here. Rav Huna was upset about what Rav Nachman did. And therefore he cursed him, obviously not knowing that it was Rabbi Rav Nachman cursed whoever did it, and the curse ended up being effective on Rabbi Rav Nachman. All right, Amar Rav Yehuda. So here comes to tax paying. Who was obligated to pay taxes? Hakol le'igle gafa v'afilu miyatme. When it comes to paying for the security of the city, for the walls or the gates of the city, then we take from everybody. We collect money from everybody, including the Tomim. Aval Rabbanan lo. But the Rabbanan, Talmidei Chachamim, are patur for paying for security tax. Why? My time, Rabbanan lo tzrichei nitiruta. Rabbanan don't need protection. This is from the Gemara in Bava Batra, and this is the source for the Niturei Karta. And the Niturei Karta, who are the guards? Who are the real guards? Who are the real defense? Those are the Talmidei Chachamim. So the Talmidei Chachamim don't have to pay for the defense because their Torah learning is the defense. So they don't have to contribute into the defense. Obviously, it has modern-day implications and political ramifications. All right, the Karya de Patio, on the other hand, for digging for water, meaning to provide water for the city, where there's a joint effort to do that, Vafilumi Rabbanan. There, everybody has to join in, including the Rabbanan, because, of course, they need to drink, just like everybody else in the city, so therefore they are obligated to pay in for that. Below Amran, and we only say that, Delo Nafko. The only reason or the only way that we say that that's the case is actually if they do it, they aren't actually going to do it. They're actually hiring others to go and do and dig. So then the Rabbanan have to contribute in that instance. Whereas if the city members themselves are going to go out to dig for the water, then avalu chluza lo. Right? Then if they're actually going to go out together and dig it out, I mean, the members of the city, the community are going to do that. The rabbanan la b'nei mefik b'lchuza ninu. That's below their dignity or inappropriate for to put the chamim into service in such a manner. So fine, they have to pay for it if they hire others, but if they're going to do it themselves, we can't force or press chamim into service in something that is below or beneath their dignity. So Amar Rav Yehuda, l'karya denaro, when it comes to dredging the river, tatai misaili loy, the people downriver have to help the people upriver. If there's a problem upriver that needs to be dredged, then the people downriver have to help the people upriver, help pay for it, because they are affected by the fact that the river is now has a lot of silt or rocks that have piled up that are causing the water to slow or to be diverted. Eli, on the other hand, if the dredging needs to be done downriver, Eli lo misai tetai. The people upriver don't have to help the people downriver, because as far as the people upriver are concerned, they're getting everything they need. Plus, the way Rashi terms it is that they're even actually, it's a detriment to them. When there more water is being drawn downriver, they lose more. Here, where the water slowed down downriver, they're gaining more. V'chilufa, and the opposite is true, b'maya demitra. And these are the, we'll call them the rain sewers, or the rain runoff. Because by the rain runoff, by the sewers, then the people upriver are more affected, because, or up sewer, we'll call them. Because the people down sewer, right, if there's a clog, right, then it backs up all the way to the top. So the people at the top have to help to pay to clear it out at the bottom. Whereas if there's a clog at the top, the people down sewer don't care. It doesn't reach them. It's not a problem for them at all. The water never comes down to them, so they don't mind. So again, the opposite will be true when it comes to draining water or to sewage. And the Gemara says that we have a braisa that supports that. Tanya nami hachi, chamesh ginot, amistapko mayim mimayan. You have five gardens that are getting water from a spring. Mimayan echad, from one spring. Vinit kalkel hamayan, and somehow the spring becomes damaged or problematic. Kulam mitaknot, im ha'elyona. Everybody has to help the person closest to the spring. Nimtzeit ha'tochtona mitaktenet im kulam. Umitakenet le'atzma. So the person closest to the spring, right, gets help from everyone else. The person down from the spring, meaning the furthest away from the spring, has to help everyone else upspring from him, right? And he has to take care of himself. Meaning if the problem is down by the person, the water's not reaching the last person on the line, then he's got to take care of the problem himself. If it's not reaching anybody above him, then he's also got to help them, because the fact that it's not reaching them means that it's also not reaching him. So again, everybody downspring has to help everybody upspring. You have five gardens or yards that are draining their water into one sewer line. And again, the pipe out or the sewer out has been ruined. The one furthest down, the sewer, right? Everybody has to help him. Because if there's a clog down the sewer, it's going to affect everyone up sewer from him. The person first on the line or the drain line has to help everybody, because any backup is going to affect him. And again, if their problem is all the way at the beginning of the sewer line, then the only one obligated to take care of is the one up at the top, because everybody down sewer from him doesn't care, because they just said no water's coming down. They don't mind that the water's not coming down there. All right, now, Amar Shmuel. Hai mon de achzik birikto denara chatzifa havi suluke lo mesalkinan le. So someone who takes possession of the rikta denara. Now this rikta denara seems to be, it's a place on the river where there is, it seems to be a port or a dock where they unload and load the ships. Now there's a Persian rule that, and we've seen this Persian rule before, that if people, who gets possession of the property is whoever pays the property tax on it. So if properties are left and there's no property tax paid on them, then people can come seize the property. As long as they pay the property tax, the property becomes theirs. So some individual decides that he likes the area on the river where either, it seems in Rashi, there actually is a dock there already, and that's where they unload, or that they're planning a dock. That's a place where it's the port and it's easy to unload. He takes possession of that property by paying taxes to the government. And what does he decide to do? He decides to plant it, build a house there, or plant the field. So now basically doing is impinging on the usage, or what's become the usage of the Rabbim. So here this person, even though what he's doing is not nice. Chatzifa habi is a mechutzuf. So luka lo masalkin le. Nevertheless, we cannot enforce, right, in court, we cannot remove him from the land, evict him from this land, because he's basically dina machuta dina. He's doing what the Persian government sees as perfectly correct, which is to pay taxes and use the land and use it as you wish. But it's not nice what he's doing, because he's hurting everybody else in doing that. Vaidna. At this point in time, the kaikot ve parsai, that the Persians believe konilach ad malei tzavre susaya maya sluke nami misalkinenle. So the Persian law changed, and until this point in time, it seems that when you took possession of the land, that you only took possession, or if you were on the banks of the river, you took possession of the river point up to what would have been, I think, the water line. That's what it seems like. And then the Persians came in with a new law that not only did you have the up to the water line, but you also got into the water. That your ownership, if you owned the beachfront property, if you owned the riverfront property, you owned all the way to the river plus into the river until your horse's neck reaches, you know, the water reaches your horse's neck. So some ways into the river was owned by you. So now, once that happened, why does that make a difference? So Rashi explains, and it's not so simple, Rashi explains that people used to take possession of the property, and everybody else was nice. Everybody else followed the basic din, which was that they left a strip of line of property along the river, so for public use. So they used to fence off their properties all the way until the point where they had to leave it for the public, and that's it. Then they wouldn't use beyond that. Then these other individuals would come along and decide, you know what? Oh, there's from their fence into the river, that's valid property in Persian law. So we're going to come on, we'll pay the taxes for it, and we're going to take over that property. So Rashi says that you could throw them off the land. Why can you throw them off the land? Because really, who's really owns that land, and who really paying for that land is the owners that are the beachfront property. They've just pulled themselves back in order to, right, comply with the rule that you have to leave space along the river. But by pulling back and doing that and complying, this individual is jumping in and trying to basically steal their property by paying the taxes for it. So Rashi says that's why we throw them off now, because they're taking property that's really not theirs. On the other hand, Tosfos says, we tell him, he says, lo keperish akuntris, right, the mefarish mesalkin le sharishon kano min amelach, ela de mesalkin le lavoda chzik lechatchila. Tosfos says, no, that we don't allow him to ever come and take possession of that land, right? Because we say, what are we worried about? If we let anybody take the property up to the water line, we're afraid, or they take property adjacent to the river, what's going to end up happening? They're going to take all that and into the river. They're going to cause a huge problem for all the boat traffic and all the public usage of this area. So in order to prevent that, we don't let people take possession of the property adjacent to the river, because we're afraid they're going to exercise their rights under Persian law to take all the way into the river, and that'll cause huge problems. So Chamim said you can't take anything in that instance. So Rashi says the problem is that the ownership. Yeah. The Tosfos says that's the reason the Chamim were gozer, or kones, in this place, not to allow people to take property adjacent to the river, is because if they do take that property, under Persian law, they would get all the way into the river. If they got all the way into the river, they would cause huge, there'd be a huge public nuisance, because they could block ships, they could stop the ports, and they become a huge. When the law changed under Persian law that allowed someone adjacent to the river to take even into the river, the Chamim then imposed the knas that says nobody can take possession of property adjacent to the river. Okay? As opposed to Rashi, who says the problem is not that the Chamim imposed a knas under the new law, but rather that people were abusing the rights here because there was someone else who owned it, and the other people were complying with the law or complying with the Chamim's decree to allow for public easement along the river, and these other people were coming in and taking the land that these other people had complied with, and therefore they were taking land that didn't belong to them. That's what Rashi says. Okay. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Hai man da achzik b'nei achei u'b'nei shutvei, person who takes possession. Now, achzik here is going to become an important word, because there's a machlokas Rashi and Tosfos how to learn this Gemara. We'll learn it according to Rashi first. So a person comes, takes possession of a property in between brothers. Brothers own a bunch of properties, and this person comes in and takes a nice piece of property right in the middle. buys a piece of property right in the middle. Ubenei shutve, or between partners. Chatzifa havi, he's a mechutzef again. Avasaluke mesalkinin, again, he's a mechutzef, it's inappropriate what he's doing. But nevertheless, we can't evict him meikar halacha. Rav Nachman amar nami mesalkinan. Rav Nachman says, no, we can throw him out. We can evict a person in such an instance. Vi mishum dina de bar metzra. Ah, if you're going to come talk about dina de bar metzra, lo mesalkinan li. In that case, we will not remove him. So, according to Rashi, what Rav Nachman is saying is, Rav Nachman says, I don't worry about the dina bar metzra klal. I don't hold of dina de bar metzra. That's what Rashi says. Nachman says, I don't hold of this dina de bar metzra. So true, in this case, if Beis Din can remove him, but the question is why, you know, obviously, why are they removing him over here? So if they come along and they remove him because of the problem that he's causing by sticking himself in between brothers or sticking himself in between shutfim, that's fine. But if the reason that we're removing over here is because dina de bar metzra, now dina de bar metzra is that someone who lives adjacent to a property has the first right of refusal in purchasing such a property. So if you're going to come with that, Rav Nachman says, I don't hold of that, don't bother me with that. And then the last opinion is Nardai Amre, Afilu Mishum dina de bar metzra misalkinan le. We remove him even because of the dina de bar metzra. Mishum shenemar, because it says, Ve'asita Hayashar Fahatov Beinei Hashem. Right, it says the end of Parsha at Chanan, right, that the requirement to do Hayashar Fahatov Beinei Hashem. So now, Rashi says that basically the first two opinions don't have a din of dina de bar metzra. They don't hold of dina de bar metzra. And the first opinion, right, Amar of Yehuda says that there's no even din of Sluke Misalkinan. Beis Din doesn't even come and evict this individual. Nachman says, okay. Very good, excellent. So that is going to become the difference between Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi seems to say that he came in and he purchased the property, or even if he purchased the property, that Rav Nachman would not hold of Dina de Bar Metzra. The Rabbeinu Tam and Tosfos point out that the Gemara here says, what's the case? Hi. Because he did something that was inappropriate here by coming in and buying property right between, and basically dividing up what should have been contiguous property between partners or between brothers. So since he did something that was just really not nice, we remove him. But that means that if someone else came and bought property and the four properties around them were owned by different people, no dina de bar metzra. So here the reason that we throw him out, according to Rashi, according to Rav Nachman, is because he did something that was really awful by dividing someone's properties in half. But if there were four different owners on a different size, according to Rav Nachman, no removal, according to Rashi. Now, Nardai say, even the Dabar Nebe Metzra, then you can remove him because of first right of refusal. Now, Tosfos asks your question, David, and says, listen, you know what it says here? It says, man de achzik. Achzik is not a term of mecher. It's not a term of buying. Achzik means I took possession of it. So what does achzik mean? Achzik means it was hefker. It was hefker under Persian law. What was the Persian law? Like following the sugyas we had before, that if you come and pay the property tax, you can take possession of it. So what the ma'achzik over here was his hefker, and he came and he grabbed it from hefker. So over there, that's what Tosa says. Over there, Rav Nachman says there's no dina de bar metzra. Why? Because when it comes to hefker, everybody knew about the hefker. Everybody knew the property was available there, and everybody could have jumped in equally to the property. If they didn't bother to come in and jump into the property and pay the property taxes, then they don't have a right now afterwards to come and claim dina de bar metzra. On the other hand, right, if it's a case of mecher, Tosa says they can claim by mecher that we didn't know he was a seller. We didn't know the individual was selling the property. Had we known he was selling it, we would have bought it. But now that we see that he sold it to you, we really want him. We want to exercise our first right of refusal. So Tosfos says that everybody here holds of dina de bar metzra when it comes to a sale, mecher. It's just this case of machzik is where they argue. Nardai says there's still dina de bar metzra, but everybody else says no. In this case of machzik, there's no dina de bar metzra. But in general, everybody holds of dina de bar metzra. So that'll be your... David, your question is exactly the difference between Rashi and Tosfos, whether it applies to Mech or only applies to Machzik. Now, V'asita yeret sharvei atov b'enei Hashem, right, and this is, many people quote this, and Rashi mentions it in Chumash as being lifnim mishur tadin. The Ramban has this famous statement there on Asita Yashar V'Tov B'Enei Hashem. He says the Ramban on the Torah mentions over there the requirement for people to act appropriately with their neighbors. The Ramban says that not, the Torah could not encompass every halakha in the Torah, and therefore there's a general principle of Asita Yashar V'Tov B'Enei Hashem, that you have to act civilly and appropriately towards your neighbor. You have to do the right thing. You can't just do whatever you want. Even though the Torah does not restrict it, you can't do whatever you want. And the example he cites is one of hear from the Gemara Bo Metzia, which is Dina de Bar Metzra. But from the Ramban, it seems like the din is not a Lifnim Mishurat Adin. This din here, Vasita Yeshava To B'nei Hashem, is not Lifnim Mishurat Adin. This is Shurat Adin. This is the way a person has to act. You have to treat others appropriately. You have to interact with your neighbors in an appropriate manner. And therefore, Vasita Yeshava To B'nei Hashem. So now, what happens in a case where we have Dina de Bar Metzra? So what is Dina de Bar Metzra? Dina de Bar Metzra is that the person who is adjacent property has the first right of refusal. So now a buyer comes in, he wants to buy the property. You know what he does? He says, let me check with the neighbors, see if they want to buy it. That's the way he can, what? Make sure that he's in the free and clear. If the neighbors do not object to his buying, then there's no longer a Dina de Bar Metzra. So what does he do? Ata im lechbe. He went to check with the neighbors. Armalei izel izbin. Right? Armalei izel zvon. He says, go and, you know, purchase it, go and sell it. So meaning that he gives permission to the seller, the buyer, he says, go through with the transaction. Tzarech lemikne mine olo. Do you have to have a formal kinyan here to lock the bar metzra, to lock in the neighbor or adjacent property to what he just committed to? He just committed not to exercise his right of refusal. When he says, I'm not going to exercise my first right of refusal, do you need a kinyan to formalize that statement? Or his commitment, is that enough? So Ravina Amar lo tzirech lemiknamine. Ravina says you don't need a kinyan. Nardai amrei tzirech lemiknamine. So again, because it's dinner de bar metzra plus it's a nardai are speaking again here. That's why the connection between the previous gemara obviously. Nardai amrei tzirech lemiknamine. Nardai says you have to make a kinyan to formalize it. Behilchasa tzirech lemiknamine. The halacha is that you have to have a kinyan to formalize his relinquishing of his first right of refusal. Now hashta damar tzirech lemiknamine. Over here, now, if he says that you have to make a kinyan, what happens if you fail to make a kinyan? E lo konomine, if you fail to make such a kinyan, yaker vizol birshute. It goes up and down in value in the hands of the adjacent property or of the neighbor's possession. What does that mean? So first of all, let's just explain. What is the reason that you would require a kinyan over here? I mean, what is the reason that the neighbor can say, listen, he tells him, listen, I won't exercise my first right of refusal. Then it comes to the time, and he calls the son, he shows up, and he wants to exercise his right of refusal. So we have to make a kinyan from preventing him from changing his mind. Now, why? Why do we have to make such a kinyan? What type of claim does the neighbor have that he can go and go back on his commitment? Right, we just saw that in the Gemara. Rav Shimon Gamliel says that you have to keep your word. We don't allow you to change with your mind. I mean, you have to do the right thing. How can he come and change his mind? So the claim that this individual has is that what he's afraid of. It's afraid, right? It's a fear of anybody. If I'm selling a property and I know my neighbor wants the property, right, what am I going to do? I'm going to move the price up because I know for him it's worth more to pay for it, right? If you have an adjacent property, I know you're willing to pay more. So you come to buy it from me, I raise the price. So what does this neighbor want to do? He wants to establish what the real market price for this property is. So what does he do? He says he waives his first right of refusal so that they have his transaction with a third party. Once the third party transaction is established, he comes in and says, now I want to buy it. Because now I know we've established what the real market price is and that you're not going to overcharge me for it. So that's why we force a kinyan here to lock him in, because if he doesn't make a kinyan, he can make such a claim. The reason that I didn't change my mind. I just wanted to ensure that I wasn't getting overcharged for the property. And that's why I told you up front I'm not going to use my right of refusal. And I relinquished it. And now I want to exercise it. So that's why he can do such a thing. Now, when he exercises his right of refusal, what basically happens is that retroactively, he has to go and purchase it at the purchase price of the other individual. If the first individual bought it, and since he's bought it, the price is skyrocketed or collapsed. Now, if he wants to buy it, he can't come and say, listen, what's the current market price? Let's look at the current market price, and you buy it for me at the current market price. No. A first right of refusal is exactly that. That I buy it at the purchase price that was done or agreed to at the time of the purchase. And that's what the Gemara is going to say. Zavin b'meya v'shavi matan. If he sold it for 100, even though it's really worth 200. So now, in this case, he should be entitled to buy it at 100. So chazina, we have to check this out first. If this individual would have sold his property to anybody for 100, then true, the neighbor or the bar metzra can come along, exercise his right, and pay 100. Vilo, if not, meaning that the reason he charged 100 was because it was his best friend. He sold the property to his best friend at 100, but the market value of the property is really 200. In that case, then he's got to pay the full market price of the property. Why? Because the reason that he could, the seller can say, the reason that I dropped the price over here was because it was a good friend, or he had done me something else. There was some other agreement between us. So if you want to come and buy it and you want to exercise your right, you got to pay market pricing. So then you can zavilei matan v'shakulei. Zavin b'matan, if the seller sells it at 200, v'shavya mea, it's only worth 100. Sever mina, the Gemara says that we want to say, matzi amalei, the seller can say to him, the buyer here, which is the neighbor, can say, right, that you here, the buyer, the lokeach, are really acting as my agent, because my first right of refusal basically is piggybacking on the buyer. So the buyer is basically going in and buying it, and in the end, when the bar mitzvah or the neighbor comes and exercises his first right of refusal, he's saying, listen, I basically sent you as an agent to purchase it, and now I'm going to exercise my right to take it from you, or take it away from you. So if that's the case, what is the din in shlichut? The din in shlichut is that when you send a shliach, it's only a litkune, when you do something positive or to my benefit. If you do something that's negative for me, then I can say, you are not my agent anymore. You are not doing what I sent you for. So same thing over here. The Gemara says that in this instance, he could claim that the first buyer is really his agent, quote-unquote his agent, and he's failing him by overpaying for the property. The Gemara says, that's not the case. Amarle Mark Shisha, Bray the Rav Chista the Rav Hashi, Hoche Amre Nardai. So again, the Nardai are involved here in a case of Bar Metzra. Mishum the Rav Nachman and Rav Nachman, Ain Ona the Karka Oat. There is no such thing as Ona by Karka Oat. If there's Ain Ona by Karka Oat, then you can't claim that the Shliach did something wrong over here. Because if there's Ain Ona the Karka Oat, you can't claim he overpaid or underpaid, because there's no such thing as overpaying or underpaying for Karka. Now, we've discussed this before. We discussed this in the Sugyot of Ona earlier in the Masechta. Just a quick refresher that Ein Ona LaKarkaot, right, there's a Machloket HaRishonim, how this works. The main Shitot, the Rashbam, and the Tosafot in the Gemara Baba Batra. The Rashbam believes, and we quoted it then, that the Rashbam believes that there is no value for property. Why? Because property has unlimited value, because you're going to live there forever. Since you're going to live there forever, you can't place a value on property. It's something of permanence, and therefore there's no way to, you know, make it quantify that value, and people will pay different prices or unlimited prices, and therefore there's really unlimited value to property. That's where the Rashbam learns over here, and that would be over here. The Rashbam fits very easily into the Gemara, because the Gemara says "Eino nala karkot" means that there is no such thing as overpaying. Land has unlimited value. If it has unlimited value, you can never claim the shliach overpaid. Right? That would be the Rashbam learns it. Tosafot, on the other hand, learns that we saw this earlier in the Masechta also, that it's a gzera takatuf. Ein ona lekarkaot is simply a gzera takatuv. There is no logic why karkaot don't have ona. That's number one. Number two, Tosafot quotes, and many other Rishon quotes, based on Yerushalmi. It has to do with the machlokas and the girsan in Yerushalmi, that there's a cap. When it comes to ein ona lekarkaot, we said there's a cap. That's up to either, depending if you're the buyer or seller who's getting cheated here, between 200%, no more than double, and 50%. It can't be more than half, right? The reduction in price. I mean, there is some sort of outer limit on ona for karkaot, and that fits well with Tosos, which says that the whole thing is a gzerat hakatuv. Now, the fact that it's a gzerat hakatuv over here makes it a little harder, because if there is such a gzerat hakatuv, why can't he say there is, meaning that what Tosos is basically saying is that you can overpay for property. Property has a value, you can overpay for it, but the gzerat hakatuv is that we ignore the fact that you overpaid for it. There just is no ona for karkaot. So then over here, what type of claim do you have? By the shliach. Right, by the shliach, if he says to the shliach, listen, you messed me up over here, you overpaid for the property. The answer is he did overpay for the property according to Tosafot. Just there is no ona. So the way you have to answer for Tosafot, the way Tosafot is going to have to explain this, when we say ein ona lekarkaot, or the answer here is that basically the buyer is saying, I am not your agent. I am not your agent. I pay what I want to pay for it. You want to exercise your first right of refusal, that's fine. But I get to pay what I want. When ein ona lekarkaot means that it's my choice. I'm not acting as your agent. I'm an independent buyer. And you have a first right of refusal. Those are separate things. I'm really not a shliach. And that's the answer of the Gemara over here. It says ein ona lekarkaot is that I get to make my own decision about price, because I have nothing to do with you. I'm not your agent. You can take it away from me, but I'm not acting as your agent over here. Right, so that is the Gemara's answer. The Gemara's answer is, if he would have sold it to anybody for 100, even though it was 50% of the value. Now, according to Tosas, it works well. Why the Gemara's using examples of 200 and 100, because two times and 50% of the limits of Ona. But David, that's what the Gemara just said before. If he would have sold it to 100 to everybody else, ein hachanami, the bar mitzvah can come in and pay 100. But if he sold it particularly to 100 to this one individual, then he can make a claim that I did not. It's not that there's no eino naba karkot. I discounted it to him because of this individual, not because that we don't say eino naba karkot. So Gemara is saying what you're saying, David, that eino naba karkot means that if he would have charged this price to everybody, that's what the bar mitzvah gets to pay. On the other hand, if there's a specific reason why he gave it to a specific individual at a specific price, then he can make a claim that it's not an issue of, right, din of the bar mitzvah, it's an issue of, right, it's not an issue of the bar mitzvah getting a right to pay what the other guy pays, it's a question of what the market price is. And at that market price, he gets to sell it to the bar mitzvah, because he says, you're not the friend, you're not my best friend, you're not my partner, I'm not selling it to you in that way. All right, now, next case, Zavin Lei. Yeah, go ahead. He could always find someone who outbids the bar mitzvah. What does that mean? Right. Right, in that case, that's a question. You're asking a question about when does the din of bar mitzvah apply. I mean, first right of refusal means that he does have to match the pricing, that he can't go in there and he doesn't get a choice to pay whatever he wants to pay, meaning that he has to pay whatever the other individual is willing to pay. So if he finds someone who's willing to pay more, in Hachanami, the bar mitzvah doesn't have a first right of refusal, because he has to match the pricing. The demand of din of bar mitzvah is not at the expense, right, of the mocher. So now, in this case, I'll just point out to you, Tzvi, here in Rashi, when he says Vasite Yashar Vatov, so Rashi makes a point over here. Davar Shiata Nachsar Kokach Shetimsa Karkot B'Makom Acher. Zita Yashar Vatov is that if you're not going to lose too much from this, it's not a big deal. That's not clear from Rashi what that means or how to quantify how much of a loss you have to take here. But if the buyer can go somewhere else and replicate what he's buying here, we demand of him to do that. Now, that's only on the buyer side, and we're going to see this all along, that the demand of Dina de Bar Mitzvah is on the buyer. The mocher, the seller, has no obligations when it comes to Dina de Bar Mitzvah. The seller's only job is to maximize his intake, his pricing. Now, once he's maximized his intake or his pricing, then the question is when the buyer comes along, right, and pays a certain amount for it, well, then does he have an obligation of a Sita Yashar Tov to provide it to the Bar Mitzvah? So that's exactly what you're saying, that in Ochanami, the mocher does have no obligation to discount it to do din at the bar mitzvah. He just has he sells it, and then the lokeach, the buyer, is under an obligation to ensure that he's not taking it against the will of the bar mitzvah, who's willing to match that price. All right? All right, so Zavin Lei Griva Da'ara B'mitza Nechse. So an individual went ahead and purchased a piece of property in the center of this guy's property. He has a big lot of land. So instead of buying like section of the land, he basically buys the middle of the land. He buys like dead center of the land. And now whoever he's purchasing for is going to be his border, his neighbor all around him. So now, Chazina, we're going to check this out. This looks very fishy when he's buying a section of land right in the middle. Why? Because what is he trying to do? He's trying to avoid having a problem of Dina de Bar Mitzvah. Because if he bought the property that touched on any other than neighbor's property, they could exercise the right of Dina de Bar Mitzvah. So in order to avoid Dina de Bar Mitzvah, what does he do? He basically goes and buys the internal property. And when he buys the internal property, there's no Dina de Bar Mitzvah because the only neighbor is the person who's selling it to him. And then later on, he'll go and buy the outer property. When he buys the outer property, he's also a Mitzvah now. He's a neighbor now. So he also has a right. So now how do we know whether he's playing games or if he's really doing something right? So Chazina, iiditu, iziboriti. We look if the internal property has some distinct feature, which means that general property is benonit. If this internal property is special because either it's a higher grade property or lower grade property, meaning it's of a different class of property, then we say that he's doing something that makes sense, which is he's buying a different class of property. I mean, there's something unique about this item and he's purchasing something unique. Right, then zvine zvine. Then the sale is a good sale. V lo, if that's not the case, irume kama arim. It's clear that he's coming to cheat over here. He's coming to cheat by avoiding the din of the bar mitzvah. So what is the implications of that? So according to Rashi, Rashi says the sale falls through. We invalidate the sale. We say he's cheating over here. And if he's cheating over here, then the sale is totally invalid. The Rambam, on the other hand, says no, that the sale goes through, but he doesn't get the din of the bar mitzvah when it comes to selling the outer ring of property. When it comes to selling the external property around that internal piece, he won't get it right as a din of the bar mitzvah. So his whole trick is to make himself a bar mitzvah by buying the internal property. So the Rambam removes what he tried to do. According to Rashi, the whole sale falls through because he's trying to cheat over here. All right, next statement of the Gemara. Matana leit ba mishum dina de bar mitzvah. A gift doesn't have a dina, a bar mitzvah. Right now, I think the best way to explain it is that the whole idea of dina bar mitzvah is a first right of refusal. A first right of refusal basically says that I'm willing to match the price, the monetary price of the object. When it comes to matana, there is no money. There is no price. If there's no price, I can't have a first right of refusal to purchase because there is no price over here. The gift is given, and there's no mecher, there's no transaction over here. So Amar Meimar, a Meimar says, "E katav le'achrayut, if he indemnifies the giftee, meaning that he gives a gift to an individual and says, if it's taken from you, I will replace it, then itba mishum din de bar mitzvah. Then it has a din of the bar mitzvah." So Rashi explains, I'll explain to you afterwards how I would have worded it. Rashi explains it, the vade mecherhu, that's definitely a sale. She ain't kutvi machrayut al matana. Nobody indemnifies a gift. People only identify sales. So, but his indemnification is an indication that there's really a sale here and not a gift. The way I would have phrased it is that if it's a gift, right, then he's giving him property and he wants him to have this particular property. So that means that there's no price going on here. There's a gift of this particular property. If he indemnifies him from the property, what is he saying to him? He's basically saying that what I'm trying to do is gift you a certain amount of money or value. If this property is taken from you, then I'm going to replace it with equivalent value. What does that tell you? It tells you that he's not really gifting him this particular property. He's gifting him a value. If he's already gifting him a value, now we know what to charge for the first right of refusal, the value here. So that's the way I would have worded it. I would have worded it when the indemnification, right, Rashi says it turns it into a mecher. What I would say is that it changes the nature of the gift over here. A gift that has no indemnification is focused on the particular property being the gift. A gift that has indemnification is not focused on the property, but rather focused on the value. If it's the value, then of course you can exercise din bar mitzvah because then the individual will end up with the same value. He'll get the money instead of the property. All right. The balim rishonim, if the original owners are coming to rebuy their property, let ba mishum din bar mitzvah, they get precedence over any of the neighbors. If they're trying to reacquire their father's or their ancestors' property, then we give them first right to buy it, and then nobody else can exercise right of refusal against them. Zavin mi'akum, v'zavin li'akum, leit ba mishum dinar bar mitzvah. If one is selling to a non-Jew, or buying from a non-Jew, there is no dinar bar mitzvah. Why? Zavin mi'akum, if you're buying from a non-Jew, right, what's the reason that we say that the buyer has to give up the property to the neighbors? Because of asita hayashar v'atov. You got to do a good thing. So if he purchases it from the akum, darmalei, ari Avricha lecha mimitzra. I took a lion off your border. I mean, basically, I just improved the neighborhood. I got you a better neighbor. So I did, I said. Rashi says, Ein lecha yasher v'tov mizeh. I can't do anything better than you to get you a better neighbor. Now, the question over here is somewhat, you could ask the question, and obviously the answer is going to have to be some sort of kimta, but the other individual, the neighbor, is willing to buy it. They're both willing to remove the guy over here. The only question is who's going to own the land, right? Because the whole idea of first right of refusal is that the neighbor's willing to pay for it and get it. So why over here, what type of tov is this that he's removing the akum if the neighbor's also willing to buy it? So what you have to answer is that this akum is only willing to sell to this Jew. So since he's only willing to sell this Jew, the Jew can claim, listen, I already did my yashar v'tov with you. I don't have to go now in addition to this do another yashar v'tov and give you the property and that the akum sold to me. You have to say something along those lines that it was the sale was directed to this Jew and he was the only one that he was willing to sell and that he wasn't interested in selling it to the neighbors. So because of that, he's already accomplished the sita yashar v'tov by removing such a neighbor and upgrading the neighborhood, and he doesn't then have to go and give up the property to the neighbor. Now, zavin la'akum, if he sells it to a goy, then akum vaday lav bar vasita yashar v'tov hu. You can't obligate the non-Jew to give up the property because of Asita Yeshar V'Tov. What you see clearly from this Gemara is that who is the obligation of Dina Bar Metzron? The buyer. It's the buyer's right responsibility, or it's the obligation is on the buyer to do the Asita Hayashar V'Tov. And because of that, when the person who's buying it is not a person who can do Asita Yeshar V'Tov, then we can't demand of him to give up the property. But nevertheless, what do we do here? Shmute Vade Mishamtinen Le. We put this seller into Nidoy. Ad Mekabel Eikol Onse Da'at Le Machmate. Until he accepts on himself responsibility of any damage that will come from selling it to this, right, this individual who is, right, probably not less than savory individual that he's going to sell it to. So again, there is no din of the bar mitzvah because we can't obligate the akum to give up the property, which is where the asit v'yashadav, the obligation devolves upon the buyer. Nevertheless, the seller here, we can oblige the seller to, or obligate the seller over here to guarantee or indemnify the neighbors against losses for selling it to this individual. Tosfos qualifies the statement. He said in other places, and Tzvi, this is your question that you asked earlier. Tosfos says, Dafka b'Yisrael rotzeh likach b'damim shenatan akum. That's only if the neighbors, the Jewish neighbors, are willing to pay the same price. If they're not willing to pay the same price, there is no dina de bar mitzvah. Dina bar mitzvah is a first right refusal where you're willing to match the pricing. Now, the question of dina bar mitzvah, how exact they have to be or how close on pricing, is a good question. From Tosfos, it sounds like dafka, right? Sounds like you've got to be exact on the pricing. I mean, it's got to be absolutely the same pricing, otherwise there's no dina de bar mitzvah. Or meaning that the Jew doesn't have the first right of refusal over here. On the other hand, the Rashi, which I quoted to you earlier on the previous Amud, Rashi over there says, Davar shiata nechsar kol kach. If you don't lose too much money, you should do the Ashar V'Tov and sell it to the neighbor. So in that case, there's more window or more room to say, which I think is the halacha, the ikar halacha, is that even if you have to take a small loss or a small discount to sell it to the Jew, we still obligate you to do that, either midin de bar mitzvah or to do asita yashar v'atov, right? So there, the question of, again, that's a subjective number, but how do you claim it? What's nechzar ma'at? How do you talk about a small loss? And then you have to quantify what that means, but there is not, it doesn't have to be the exact same price or first right refusal, but rather even small discount would still make a demand, according to Rashi, to have a din de bar mitzvah or to sell to the Jew over the akum. All right, now, the Gemara says, next case, Dama Rav Ashi, Mashkanta, I'm sorry, I skipped a line, Mashkanta leit ba mishum din de bar mitzvah. A mashkon does not have a din of bar mitzvah. Now again, we had this earlier in the Gemara. We had this on Samech Chet, which is that the mashkon, when he takes this mashkon, this collateral, and then he buys the mashkon from the person he lent the money for. So instead, again, at the end of repaying the loan, this individual takes the mashkon, he buys it from him, and that forgives the loan, and he keeps the mashkon. So there is no din of bar mitzvah. The Amar Ravashi, and this is the same we saw before, Amar li save de matamachsia, the elders of matamachsia told me, mashkanta. Right? What does it mean? Why is a mashkon? Why is collateral called a mashkanta? Because the shchuna gabe, he is the closest neighbor. Meaning that my nafkamina, what does that make a difference for? The dina de bar mitzvah. Who is the bar mitzvah over here? The bar mitzvah is the one holding the collateral, the one with the loan. Because since the borrower has encumbered all of his property to this individual basically becomes the adjacent owner, or the closest adjacent owner of all this property. And if that's the case, he has the first right to buy the mashkon, and nobody, the neighbors are already in a secondary category of adjacency. They are not as close as this individual who has lent him the money. Right now, Limkor... I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Uh-huh. I mean, you create a fictional mashkon in order to avoid the problem. All right, that's an interesting idea. I guess in these cases we have to do chazina. Let's see what the whole reason behind the loan is, and what you have to over here you have to investigate what the issue is. But so you're right, that could open it up to abuses. I think you're right. Gemara says limkor berachok v'ligol bekarov. An individual is trying to upgrade his life's quality of life, which is that he wants to sell property that's further away from him in order to buy property that is closer. Bira, he wants to sell property that's of a lower quality, v'ligol b'yafeh, to buy higher quality property. Leit ba mishum dina bar mitzvah. There is no dina de bar mitzvah. Why? Because over here, there's a time is of the essence. He's found property close to him or better quality property that he's able to buy right now. If we hold up his sale of the other property, he's going to miss out on buying over here. So now, in that instance, we say, wait, the asita yashar v'atov, right? We're not going to do that at the expense of the mocher. Over here, if we wait and let the neighbors have a first right of refusal, it might cause the seller to lose and lose out. So why is that asita yashar v'atov? He has an equal demand or right to asita yashar v'atov. And the yashar v'atov for him is to be able to sell quickly and immediately. So therefore, if he can sell quickly and immediately, he has a buyer lined up and everything's ready, we let him sell because he has something else pressing to put the money into. He needs the money immediately. So in that instance, we say there is no dina de bar mitzvah. Lekarga, to pay the head tax. Limizone, to pay mizonot of an isha or the bat. Likvura, and for burial, leit ba mishum dina de bar mitzvah. Over there is no dina de bar mitzvah. Again, time is of the essence. When time is of the essence, we don't impose a dina de bar mitzvah. Because again, v'asita yashar v'tov has two sides to it. From the buyer's perspective, from the neighbor's perspective, v'asita yashar v'tov. But there's also v'asita yashar v'tov for the mocher, for the seller. And over here, for instance, with kvura, what are we going to do? We're going to hang out and wait to negotiate out with the neighbors. The mate is going to sit there until they figure out who's going to really buy the property? No. We want the mate to be buried right away. If we need the money, sell it right away and get the money. And same thing with the head tax. What you're going to The tax man's there waiting to get paid, and in their day, the tax man was not somebody you mailed the tax into. He was coming around to collect. He's saying, listen, hang out. I don't have the money now. I got to check with the neighbors if they want to buy the property. We don't ask you to cause angst to yourself or to possibly rile up the tax collector in order to do dina de bar mitzvah, because that's going to cause the mocher, the seller, a problem. And same thing with mizonot, right? We don't demand in that sense. Now, damrei narda. So the Nardar also say, the cargo lekuvra. How can I show that these are time-sensitive issues? Because generally when Beis Din comes to sell property, they have to make an auction. They have to make an announcement. They have to do an auction in order to receive the largest proceeds possible. But over here, in these instances of the head tax, mezonot, and kuvra, we don't do that. Because what are you going to do? Again, with the mate, you're going to wait around until they do an auction to bury the mate? Doesn't make sense. Right? We're not going to wait. We're not going to risk the ire of the tax collector in order to do an auction. And the same thing with mizonot. The woman and the daughters need mizonot now. We're not going to make a whole long process in order to get them the mizonot. So the fact that time is of the essence, right, it's both has application, both by the din of auction, by the basin, but also as a din over here, din of bar mitzvah. We're not going to do a sitev yashar tov when it comes at the expense of the seller. All right, now, the isha, uliyatme, ulishutve, leit ba mishum din of bar mitzvah. When it comes to a woman who is purchasing property, there is no dina de bar mitzvah. Why? One is the principle of dina de bar mitzvah. Dina de bar mitzvah, Rashi explained it before, is that if you don't buy this property and the neighbors take it, you can go find a property somewhere else. So since you can go find a property somewhere else, why you cause the neighbors the problem? Let them have it and you go for somewhere else. But a woman, we don't expect of the woman, a woman just takes the first property she can get to. We don't expect her to be called Gvoda Bat Melech Pnima. We don't expect her going around trying to buy properties. If she found a property and she wants to buy it, we let her buy it. We don't, again, the Asita V'Yashar Tov here is for the Isha not to have to go and look for other properties, right? She's an Almana and she's looking for property. We say, let her take this property and don't give it to the neighbors. Liyatme, the same thing true as the Yutomim. Isha and Yutomim, in both these instances, they, as soon as they get the property, that's the first property they come across, they want it. We're not going to obligate them to go looking around for properties. Ulishutve, by Shutafim, right? If two partners, one is selling out, then the other partner is the closest neighbor. Again, their closest adjacency is just like Mashkon, the lender is the closest person to it. So too by a shutfut, in a partnership, the partner is the closest neighbor. There is no other neighbor closer than him, and therefore he gets the first right of refusal. Now, the next Gemara is a Machloket HaRishonim, Rashi and Tosfot. Rashi says, I used to learn like Tosfot. Obviously, he doesn't say in that manner. He says, my Rebbeim used to explain the Gemara the same way that Tosfot explains it. So we'll explain that first. And then afterwards, we'll go back to Rashi, who rejects it. So he says, Shcheni Ha'ir u'Shcheni Sadeh. Shcheni Ha'ir Kudmim. If you have a piece of property that you're going to sell, and you have adjacent neighbors, on one side is a city, meaning that you're basically the buffer zone between the other field and the city. So your property is right up against the houses in the city, and then there is a field on the other side worked by someone else. Who gets precedence over here? who gets precedence when it comes to dinner bar mitzvah, who's considered the better bar mitzvah? So when it says Shechene Ha'ir Kodmin, right, the people in the city are the ones that get the priority here. Shachen v'talmid chacham, when it comes to a neighbor and a talmid chacham kodem, then a talmid chacham takes precedence over here. So it's a dinner or a metzvah, and the neighbors are a talmid chacham and someone else, and talmid chacham gets precedence. Karov v'talmid chacham, it comes to a relative and a talmid chacham kodem, the talmid chacham trumps. So the talmid chacham trumps both the neighbor and the relative. So the Gemara's question obviously is, Ibai lahu, shachen v'karov mai. What's the relationship between a neighbor and a relative? Who gets priority? Tashma, tov shachen karov mi achrachok. A good neighbor is worth more than a bad brother. Basically, that neighbors take precedence over here over relatives. So the way Tosfos explains it, another Rishon explained it, this Gemara is a continuation of the Gemara before, of Dinah de Bar Metzra. So the question of Bar Metzra, just like before, Shutaf gets a special dispensation to be the closest bar mitzvah. Also, in these cases, there is no application of dinner bar mitzvah because certain of these individuals get such a precedence or get special privileges that the dinner bar mitzvah does not apply in these instances. So that's the way most of the Rishonim learn it. Rashi comes back in the end. He says, that's the way I learned it from my Rebbeim. But listen to this line in Rashi. It's unbelievable what he says here. He says, Vani lo didakti ba mipim Rabbeinu kol tzarchi. When I learned it from my Rebbeim, I didn't look into it so well. I should have spent more time thinking about it. And I think, Vadhena Pirashti Dimatram Dilei Kamar. And I, until this time, explained it like Tosfot and the other Rishonim did. Vhashta lo nearly. He says, but now that I've looked into the Inyan more carefully, he says, I don't think that's the right explanation. Dim Kane, Havale Mitnu, Bahadi Hanach Te'el. Why does the Gemara switch, first of all, the way it expresses it, and why is it not included in the previous lists of people who are not subject to Dinah de Bar Metzra? Right? Why isn't it just included by the way Isha Yat Me Shutve Late by Shum Dinah de Bar Metzra? Why can't you say that by Shachinir, Tamid Chacham? Why can't you include in that same list? And what is all this discussion of Kodmin? One goes before the other. So Rashi says, and his biggest question is, one of our biggest questions is, what is the din of a Tamid Chacham? What's the din of Dinah de Bar Metzra? Dinah de Bar Metzra is that the buyer has to do Asita Yashar V'Tov. Why does a Talmud Chacham have a tour from doing Asita Yashar V'Tov? Just because he's a Talmud Chacham means he doesn't have to do Asita Yashar V'Tov? That doesn't make sense, Rashi says. Now, obviously, the way to explain it for Tosfos and the others in this instance is to say what? That a Talmud Chacham, like an Isha, we don't expect the Talmud Chacham to go around and find properties, other properties. We say if he found a property, his job is to be learning. So we're not going to expect of him to go around and find and buy properties. So in this instance, we say, right, Talmud Chacham takes that. That's late to the Din Bar Metzra. That's how I think the other Rishonim are going to have to explain it. So Rashi explains the case here. The case here has nothing to do with Din of the Bar Metzra. Neither of these individuals has adjacent property to the seller. The question is that they both are close by, but not neighbors. Who gets precedence? When you're going to sell, because of Asita Yashar V'Tov, who should you sell it to? If you have two buyers who are not neighbors, who are not bar mitzvahs, who should you sell this property to? If you have a choice between your relative and a Talmud Chacham, you have a choice between people in the city and people who have a field, who is the one who is closer, who's the one that you should sell it to? And that's a question according to Rashi. The Rashi says it has nothing to do with bar mitzvah, it has to do with the din in k'timus. Who should you give priority to? And the question's independent of the Gemara that took place beforehand. Right now, the Gemara continues. Now, Hani Zuzei Tave, Vahani Zuzei Tkule, Leit Be Mishum Dinah Bar Metzra. Again, it's irrelevant which way it is, but you have certain coins that are really good coins, right? And you have other coins that are heavy coins. I mean, that coins come in different forms in their day. They weren't always exactly minted in the same way. So you have certain, even though they're both willing to pay the same price, one of them is willing to pay in coins that are in circulation or more in circulation, or one of them is willing to pay with heavier coins or bigger coins. So the seller can say, I prefer one of those two payment methodologies. So even though they're giving the exact same value, there is no din of the bar mitzvah because the mocher, the seller, has a right to take what he wants. So again, we said this before, that the seller does not have an obligation, there's no obligation on the seller to lose here. The seller can get paid exactly what he wants and how he wants. And therefore, if one of the buyers is willing to pay him the way and in the coinage or the value that he wants, he has a right to take that and not have the din of the bar mitzvah come in and say, listen, I'll pay you the same money, but I'm amount of money, but I'm going to give you in a different coinage. So that's why there is no din of the bar mitzvah over here. Hane tzairei v'hane shari leipahub shim din of bar mitzvah. Over here too, if he hands him coins that are wrapped up in a sealed package, and then the other individual hands him loose coins, again, the seller can say, I'm willing to take. The way Rashi reads it, I would have read it the opposite, to be honest with you. Rashi reads it that the seller over here can say, I prefer the one who gave me the loose coins. Why? Because I can count the loose coins. He's not going to tell me I took any of them. My fear is if I open up the wrapped coins to count them, the people are going to say that you didn't return us all the coins when I give it back. So he's afraid to open up the sealed coins. So since he's afraid to open the sealed coins, he can say to me, I prefer to take open coins. And that's, again, his right to say, I want open coins. I would have said it the other way around. We had earlier in the Gemara in Bava Metzia, if you remember, that if an individual pays back, he owes him money, he should pay him back all in one shot. But if he pays him back coin by coin, even though it's a good repayment of the loan, that's not a nice thing to do. Why? Because what can the lender say? He can say, listen, you're going to lose. If you give it to me 1-1, I'm going to lose the coins. If you give it to him one shot, it's all bundled together, I'm not going to lose the coins. So I think you could have argued the other way also over here, which is that he can say, I prefer the bundle coins because I'm not going to lose the coins. Versus you give me these loose coins, let's change all over the place, I'm going to lose the coins. So again, but either way, it doesn't matter. The whole point of the Gemara here is that if someone has a preference to the way they want to get compensated, the mocher has that right. And you can't invoke din bar mitzvah when it is to the detriment of the seller. The seller gets what he wants. Now, if you want to match that, you can have din bar mitzvah. But if you're not going to match it exactly, then there is no din bar mitzvah. Right now, next case. Amar. If the neighbor says, the bar mitzvah says, Izil v'etrach v'ayte zuze, I'll go and I'll try to raise the money to pay for it. V'ayte zuze lo natrin le, we don't wait for him. That's not a commitment to pay for it. That's not a din of the bar mitzvah. Din of the bar mitzvah means that you're actually going to buy it. You're ready to buy it. Amar Izil v'ayte zuze, if he says, just wait a minute, I got to go to the ATM and get you the money, then chazina, igav da amid hu, if we can assess and look at this guy and say that he could afford to pay for it, then the azil v'ayte zuze natrin le. Right, that he's rich enough, he can have the money, he could get the money quickly, then we wait for him. V'lo, lo netrinin le. If not, we do not wait for him. Meaning that the basic premise is if he has the money ready and he's ready to pay, we don't expect the mocher to wait again. We don't expect the seller to be disadvantaged and have to wait. If he has a buyer in hand, we don't let the buyer go because we say, the other guy says, let me go see if I can raise the cash. If he can match it and get him the same quality, value, and everything today, then we say, go ahead. But if not, we do not obligate him to sell it to the bar mitzvah. Now, ara dechad ubate dechad. If you have a piece of property on which there is a house built, the person owns the property, and then the house person bought a lease, took a lease out on the property, and he built a house on that property. So mare ara ma'akev amare bate. The person who owns the land can stop. He becomes the bar mitzvah for the one who wants to sell the house. If the house owner wants to sell his house, the landowner can say, listen, I want the house on my land. Meaning, so he can claim, or he could buy the first right of refusal, and he can buy it. He can be that. But the other way around, mare bate, lo ma'akev amare ara. The house person, if the land person, the landowner comes to sell it, the house owner can't say, I'm your neighbor, I have the first right of refusal to purchase the land. Why not? So Rashi says the reason that it's not that way is because, in the end, what's going to happen to the lease? In the end, the lease expires, and what happens to the house? It's going to revert back to the landowner. So the house owner here really is not a neighbor, because in the end, he's going to lose the lease. The lease will eventually expire. That's the way Rashi explains it. The Rambam says it has to be a case where the lease has expired. Only once the lease has expired is the owner of the house no longer a neighbor. But if the lease is still in effect, according to the Rambam, it sounds like he would be considered a bar mitzvah, and he could have a first right of refusal to purchase the land. All right, next case. Ara dechad v'diklei dechad. One person owns the land, and the other person took a lease, right, in order to plant dekalim, palm trees on it. Mare da'ara motzi ma'akev amare de'diklei. Again, the landowner could stop the owner of the dekel. I mean, if the person who owns the dekel, who leased out the property or took it to take the dekalim, he can stop him from selling the dekalim to anyone else and buy them. But Mari Dikle Lomatz Me'akev, on the other hand, the other way around is not true. The owner of the Dekalim cannot stop the landowner from selling out his property. Again, you'll have the Rashi will say because there's a lease here, and the lease will eventually expire. And the Rambam will say it's because the lease has expired, he no longer has a dinah de bar mitzvah. Now, that the owner of the Dekal cannot stop the owner of the land. Now, Ara levate v'ara lezaro. He has a property he's going to sell, and there's a choice over here. The adjacent, it depends, it seems to be here that the adjacent properties, or the person who's going to buy it, is one of the persons, one of the individuals is going to use it for building a house on it, and the other individual is going to use it to plant or to cultivate. So you have neighbors that want it, and one of the neighbors needs it to build a house on, and one neighbor needs it to cultivate. So who gets princes? Where it says, Yishuv Adif, V'leitba Mishum Dina de Bar Mitzvah. Over here, Yishuv takes priority, and since Yishuv takes priority, there's no Din of the Bar Mitzvah. They would give precedence to whom? So now Rashi has a different girsa, or his girsa reads, Yishuv de Bate Adif. Houses take priority. Houses always, Yishuv means housing takes priority. Housing's always in the forefront, and therefore the one who wants it for the house gets the priority over here, and we don't consider the one who wants to buy it to cultivate. So what's interesting over here is that we just saw the Gemara, if you remember, back on Dav Kuf Aleph Amud Bet, there we saw the Gemara that said that when it comes to Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, so at least maybe here you could argue that it's outside of Eretz Yisrael, but at least in Eretz Yisrael, we had a Gemara back on Kuf Aleph Amud Bet says that if someone comes and plants a tree illegally on your property or without permission, or a person comes and builds a house on your property, where on Kuf Aleph Amud Bet, right, we say, but by it, we say that Shomim Lo, the owner of the property can say, take your house and remove it from here. But when it comes to the field, he cannot demand of the individual to remove the tree from the field. My time, what did the Gemara say? Mishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So over there, back in the Gemara, on Kuf Aleph Amud Bet, it says that Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, what takes precedence? Planting takes precedence over housing. Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is not considered when it comes to housing, but it is considered when it comes to trees or planting. So that's, and when I saw that, I didn't know how to explain this Gemara. How come here, Yishuv Debate? I happened to find that the Chavos Ya'ir, Chavos Ya'ir is found on the Rif, in the backs of the Gemara, it's on Daf Samachim with Bet with Dape Arif. There, the Chavos Ya'ir asks this question, or he sends the hint at this question, and he answers over there one answer, which is that the difference between our Gemara over here on Kuf Chemin Bet and the Gemara back on Kuf Aleph Amud Bet is that over there they were talking about ilanot, trees. Over here we're talking about zriya, which is tvua or other crops. When it comes to trees, trees takes precedence when it comes to Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, even over batim, even over housing. When it comes to comparison between housing and zriya and planting, cultivating seasonal, right, or year to year, which is planting there, batim, then housing takes precedence. That's one answer. The other answer he gives is that the circumstances or that we find ourselves are indifferent. Over here, we're talking about lokeach. We're talking about buyers. Over there, we're talking about someone who built illegally. So over there, you could be mechalek that the considerations are different over here. Over here, where the demand is vasita yashar vatov, which is the more yashar vatov, which is the better thing to do and the better yishuv. On the other hand, you know, needing housing, it seems to be a priority that is greater than the need for cultivation. On the other hand, when it comes to the other case, where it's a case where it's not a case of Asita Yashar Vatov, but rather a din purely in Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, comes to a pure din in Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, over there we'll give precedence to Ilanot and not to housing. Housing is not the issue when it came to Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, but rather Ilanot. So the issues are different over here. One's dealing with Yishuv Eretz Yisrael in the context of an illegal planting or building, and over here we're talking about a buyer and where we want the Asita Yashar Vatov. We want to do the best thing, and the best thing is to provide somebody or allow the person who needs the housing to purchase it over here. We'll come back to this Gemara again because there's an important Machloket HaRishonim over here. But let's finish up the Gemara and then we'll come back to that Machloket HaRishonim. The Gemara says, Ifsik a Mishunita or Richva de Dikla. If you have a piece of property, and between this piece of property and the neighbor, there is bedrock, or there is a line of palm trees, but very tightly planted. There's basically a tree border that's there. So now, Chazina, Im yacholach nizba filu telem echad, if you can plow one row between the two properties as a single row, it be mishum dina bar metzra. Then there's a dina bar metzra. Vilo late ba mishum dina bar metzra. Over here, then there is no dina bar metzra. So before we explain that dina bar metzra really has to do with the thing of the idea of asita yashar v'tov. The buyer, we say to the buyer, listen, you want to buy this property, but here the neighbor, it's much better for him to have this property because he can work this property. If he has adjacent property, it's an economy of scale that if he can work the two properties together. So you do him a favor, asita yashar v'tov, and go ahead and find yourself another piece. There's other property out there. Go find yourself another piece of property. Don't buy this particular property. So what the Gemara says over here is, well, let's see if there really is economies of scale. Is there really a benefit to the neighbor? Well, that will be determined whether you can actually work the two fields together. If the fields are separated by bedrock or by a tree fence where they are, there's no way to work the two fields together, then we say, no, dina debar metzra, because the advantage of having the adjacent field is really not there. On the other hand, if there's a way to get at least some small connection between the fields, then already the economies of scale, the ability to work the two fields together is apparent, and if that's the case, or is available, and therefore there will be a dina debar metzra in this case. Now, hane dalid b'nei metzrani, so if you have four neighbors, I mean you have a property, and on each side of the property there are neighbors who are adjacent, so in that case, the kadam chaminayu v'zavin, one of the neighbors jumped the gun and bought the property, zvine zvine, that what he bought is done. I mean, since he is a neighbor, and he does have a first right of refusal, but since he got in there first and bought it, he has the ability then to keep that property. There is no din of the bar mitzvah anymore because he is the bar mitzvah. On the other hand, v'ikulu atu ba'adei adadi, if they all come to object together, to object to another sale, or again, the case before could have been where this one individual was the only one who objected and bought it, the others did not object at that time, then there's only a din of bar mitzvah, so this individual gets to keep it. But here, where all four of them come at once, or all four of them object, Pagulu Huber Karnazil. We divide up the property on a Karnazil. A Karnazil is go to the corners. Zil Lekaren, go to the corners. I mean, you can see the picture on the bottom left of the daf here in Rashi. It's a picture. They divide the property. They create an X in the middle of the property. And that way, everybody's adjacency, they have the fullest extension, of the fullest borderline that's shared between them and the property. So that will maximize the overlap or the adjacency of the property by cutting the property in such a diamond right by an X that leaves a triangle on each side, that will maximize the benefit to each one of the adjacent neighbors. Now, what I wanted to go back, I mentioned before, was to a machloket rishonim, and that has to do with Tosfos over here. Tosfos over here says that the mare da'ara, the owner of the land, ma'kev shalim kor hala etzav avanav, the other person can't sell the house without giving it to the owner of the land. Aval b'bayit etzel bayit, Ukarka she'eno made the zriya lo shayach dina de bar metzra. It's a very, very important statement by Tosfot, which says that there's only a dina de bar metzra, and it's what Tosfot says, dafko besadeh shel zriya shayach hayasher v'tov. Only when it comes to cultivatable property, property that is used for growing things, is there a dina de bar metzra. And that's the way Rabbeinu Tam explains in one of his Tshuvot, that Dina de Bar Metzra does not apply to houses, does not apply to land that is not used for planting. It only applies to land that is used for Zriah, for planting. The reason that Rabbeinu Tam brings, it's quoted by others, it's quoted amongst the Nemuka Yosef and others that quoted the Rashba, that Rabbeinu Tam, the reason that Rabbeinu Tam says that Batim don't have a Dina de Bar Metzra, as we see over here, that if you have a row of palm trees that divides the two fields up, there is no Dina de Bar Metzra. So a house has a wall. There's a wall. I mean, part of the houses have walls. And since the house has a wall, that dividing line of the wall of the house makes that there is no Dina de Bar Metzra, because the house is walled off from the adjacent property or from the adjacent house, and therefore there is no Dina de Bar Metzra over here. So Rabbeinu Tam, Tosfos, bring two reasons why there should be no Dina de Bar Metzra outside of the Zriya. One is because the whole reason of the Dina de Bar Metzra is because of the adjacency of the property that it can work together, and that's not applicable in those other cases. And the other reason is because the Dina de Bar Metzra, we saw that if you have some sort of division between the property that you're in and the other property, then there is no Dina de Bar Metzra. And over here, by a house, there's a wall. And that wall is the biggest differential. Now, other Rishon, including the Rashba, disagree with Rabbeinu Tam and say the Dina de Bar Metzra applies even by cases of houses and even by cases where it's not Bnei Zira, the land is not Bnei Zira. And he rejects the reasoning of the Rabbeinu Tam over here about the trees. He says, Ein ha-ra'ya nidon domel ra'ya. The Rabbeinu Tam's proof from here about the line of trees that the house also should not have a din de bar mitzvah is not applicable. It's not comparable. Why? What is the reason that when the trees are planted there that you would not consider to be din de bar mitzvah? Is because once the row of trees is planted, nobody would come and uproot those trees. Nobody would even have a havamina to uproot the trees, and maybe even possibly not allowed to uproot those trees. So since those trees will never be removed, the properties will never be adjacent, because that dividing line will always exist. That's not true of a house. In a house where you buy an adjacent property, if you expand the house, right, then you can knock the wall down. People knock out walls all the time to expand their houses. That's something that is within the realm of consideration, and therefore there should be a dina de bar metzra in this instance. Also, the Rabbeinu Tam adds, right, that is not so. Number one, what was the reason that we said by a property that there is a din de bar mitzvah? Is because you can go and buy another property. So if you can go and buy another property, fine, give up this property. So go ahead and find there are plenty of other properties that are out there. On the other hand, when you come to a house, houses are unique, and houses are not in supply. There's not a huge supply of houses. So in that instance, we can't say, Vasita Yashar V'tov, give up your house, give up this house, because you'll find another house. You may not find another house. And if you can't find another house, right, then we can't obligate you to a Vasita Yashar V'tov when it comes to your detriment. Then where's the Yashar V'tov for the buyer over here? And also, number two, Ba'od, the mi yeshlo bayit lo itaken shesalik lo kokeach mi bayit shekanala dirato, kdele chafifu lo tavat libo. We can't insist. What's the buyer? A buyer is coming along here to buy a house. His neighbor says, I have my house adjacent here. I want to expand. I want to have a mansion. So I get the right, the first right of refusal, the asida yashar v'tov, is that I live in a mansion and you don't get this house. Rabbeinu Tam says, what type of asida yashar v'tov is? We are, because the other person wants to live in some sort of mansion or have some huge expansion of his house, therefore we're going to demand that the individual bought the adjacent house to give it up. He says, that's not called a Asita Yashar V'tov. That doesn't make any sense. That the individual is buying a basic house. He should be able to keep his house. And that's his right. We don't give a first right of refusal to another individual who wants to expand and build a massive house over here, then therefore take it away from an individual who's just buying his basic house next door. So based on that, the Rabbeinu Tam, again, gives numerous reasons why he thinks that Din de Bar Mitzvah does not apply to houses. Again, we saw three of the reasons. One reason we saw was that it only applies to Zriah because of the adjacency of the properties and the ability to work it together. Plus, the properties are replaceable. You can use a property somewhere else. The buyer here can go find some other property, right? Whereas when it comes to a house, that's not true, right? The adjacency of the houses, right, may not necessarily be is not a necessity, right, number one. And number two is, even if we say the individual, you can go find another house, that may not be true. Finding other houses may be very difficult, and actually if there's, may be unlikely, and therefore why should we kick him out of the house and not let him live here? That was one reasoning of the Rabbeinu Tam. The other reasoning of the Rabbeinu Tam is that, just like we saw about the Kalim, the wall that it divides between two fields, so too the wall of the house divides, so there's no Dilei Bar Metzor. We saw that the Rashba rejected that reasoning of the Rabbeinu Tam. And the last thing the Rabbeinu Tam says, that it's not Vasita V'yashar V'tov to demand that someone give up their house in order that someone else can have a massive house. Okay, we're going to stop over here.